First, we design our tools, and then they design us in return. When we create objects and contexts that surround us, we are in fact designing our very selves. That is the key assumption of ontological design. The idea that by designing objects, spaces, tools, and experiences, we're in fact designing the human being itself. And the ability to design human beings is going to be central to survive the technological shifts of the coming decades with even a semblance of agency. Through the lens of ontological design, as we understand it, reality is a technical problem because perception is inextricable from reality. Furthermore, in the internet age, perceptions can be, and often already are, creatively manipulated by external forces. As such, to navigate the virtual wilderness of the internet age, the deliberate design of subjectivities is our greatest tool.
According to Marshall McLuhan, media technology paradigms have a deep impact on human perception and on the organization of societies. And there are perhaps three notable paradigms. First, the paradigm of written media, writing, which expands into the era of print. Secondary, the electronic communication paradigm. And finally, what we're seeing now, it's a networked communication paradigm, which is our paradigm, the paradigm of AI, internet, technology. So as each of these paradigms developed, human society adapted, civilization co-evolved with technology, and our notion of human being evolved with the technology. The era of writing favors abstraction from the environment and privileges one sense, seeing, sight, above all others. And in its culmination in the print era, broadly speaking, modernity, it produces an alienated abstract subject, the individual. The electric and the networked eras engulf man in a totally overlapping multi-sensory media environment. Against this abstract individual, the electric network man, and indeed woman, are deeply involved in the particular real of their experiences. This can be recognized in philosophical framing as a shift from a political individual to an existential Dasein, or being with a capital B. This multi-sensory media environment and the technologies that produce it in frame our being are Dasein. Being and technology are inextricably connected. As we design our tools, they design us in return. So it's not a case of returning to a pre-modern being. Pre-modern man may have had his being shaped by how he saw the trees, how he heard the wind, how he earned his bread. But the being of today's network man is shaped by how computers and gadgets and AIs shape how we see the trees, how we hear the wind, and how we earn our bread. Human bodies have, strictly speaking, no limits. There is no one definable moment in space-time when we can all definitely say that our bodies end and our surroundings begin. This much was said by Robert Pepperell in his Post-Human Manifesto. Human bodies have no boundaries. Consciousness, mind, and the environment, reality, cannot be separated. They are continuous. No finite division can be drawn between the environment, the body, and the brain. The human is identifiable, but not definable. That's from the manifesto. When you first picked up a pen in school, you were irreversibly transformed into a writer. You learned how to write, your hands changed, your brain changed, your ability to be was altered. We have to admit that technology and being go hand in hand. Technology is part of our extended being. My clothes keep me warm. They extend my skin's ability to keep me warm. My glasses, if I wore glasses, would extend my ability to see out of my eyes. My shoes extend my feet's ability to walk many miles. The same happens with grammar, with technology, with writing, with electricity, with the internet. These things extend our brains, our cognitive processes, our memories. A notebook is a prosthetic for the memory. The internet is a technology that alters our very understanding of reality at an ontological level. The very way we understand our own being is radically altered by it. Daniel, tell us more about that.
Capitalism functions by colonizing desire. Supply produces its own demand, its own desire. 19th and 20th century capitalism used primary adverts to turn attention and desire towards its products. Today, we increasingly spend our lives in digital platforms and user experiences designed to capture our attention and our desire. Plastic scales, attention doesn't. You can make one bottle, and by very similar processes, you can produce a million bottles. Attention, however, fundamental to desire and to how we become subjects, does not scale because its prime matter is time. And in this sense, we can therefore say that the digital platforms and the internet, they represent a new regime of time itself. They represent a disruption of the time order that our species more or less evolved for, and having us being thrown into a place where time is a resource being extracted from us, just like ore is extracted from a mine. The digital networked paradigm is therefore teaching us an important lesson. The time is fundamentally connected to being. We are being in time through time. Our attentions are the most precious resource in techno-capitalism because it commands all other resources. Time is the core resource being forcibly extracted from us by the deceptive and cunning user experience design patterns of digital media, of our social media feeds, and of the whole civilizational paradigm we've entered in. We're being left without sky, without the ability to articulate our own lack of freedom, our own oppression. Psychological warfare is not only something that Silicon Valley or the CIA or any other three-letter agency around the world engages in. It is of the paradigm. It is of the age. It is part of the developments of the noosphere, the sphere of mind. As this new sphere, this new layer on the earth is emerging, with it, a series of chaotic ecological events are also undergoing. One of them, as a consequence of human activity and as a consequence of the birth of the noosphere, can be called nuopolitics, politics waged in the sphere of mind and ideas. Such is the state of war of politics. Mind is the battle space, the weapon of battle, and the reward of battle, to paraphrase Pat Ryan. All of us are always already civilian soldiers without knowing it. The great stroke of luck for the military class's terrorism is that no one recognizes it. People don't recognize the militarized part of their identity, of their very consciousness, to paraphrase Giorgio Agamben. Those are the memes of ontological production, and techno-capitalism and the war machine have seized them. We've been colonized, and we are in a process of continuous defeat, neurological defeat, processual defeat, intrinsic. We've been colonized at the level of desire, of sense-making, of our very deep ontologies. And so how does ontological design enter here? Ontological design is mimetic self-defense. It is the philosophical idea that one can design one's own mimetic environment and therefore protect one's own being from such assaults. It's not so much a 60s-style emancipatory process or project. It is more like a second amendment for the mind. It is the design of being as a creative applied discipline, just like architecture does for buildings or user experience design does for phone apps and digital platforms. Except on this case, it's about designing existence and ontology itself. Subject and object are not split. We need to forget this Cartesian split between mind and body, self and world. They are continuous and self-feedbacking. When we design the world, we design the self. And when we design the self, we're also designing the world. And that's the importance behind designing discourses, designing habits, designing norms, regimes of truth, of that which can and cannot be said, looking at it critically, but also creatively. Designing power and its flows in themselves, designing the associative networks of the body-mind, how we plug into the noosphere and into the extended libidinal economy of which we are part and parcel.
Now, it's worth mentioning that this also comes with its own inherent dangers. Paul Virilio describes an integral accident. He says, when you invent the ship, you also invent the shipwreck. When you invent the plane, you also invent the plane crash. When you invent electricity, you invent electrocution. Every technology carries its own negativity, which is invented at the same time as technical progress. With every new technology, there also appears a new kind of disaster, new kinds of accidents. So as we go forward into ontological design, it's worth bearing this in mind. Now, to conclude, I'm just going to read a passage from the Manifesto of Ontological Design. In the age of fourth generation warfare, there's a pressing need for a design discipline geared towards ontology. Reality tunnel design is a competitive struggle. Memes are weaponized, and the autonomous movement of the non-living is threatening to engulf us within its machining desire. Belief is a technological problem bound to be solved, first by talented curators, the magically inclined technomancers, eventually by advanced neural networks and autonomous flows of capital. History is the genealogy of this singularity, the event in whose threshold we now stand. Technologies have co-evolved with us and have led us to the edge of an abyss. What will happen to the idea of the individual? Sense-making is already an unsalvageable disarray, and it doesn't stop there. What will happen to basic ontological functions like time, grammar, even the distinction between life and death, when autonomous AI partners up with the markets, capital, the war machines to curate optimum human reality, to technologically solve phenomenology? This is a question we must answer, not only philosophically, but practically. And it will inevitably be answered.
It is our intention to outline a design methodology that empowers its practitioners in such a panorama. Thank you.